take that step, do it. You've already got the basics down. You may not know the language, but you know the logic.
Yeah.
And just jump with it.
The Women in Tech podcast is an independent production funded by you, the community. To support Women in Tech, if you believe in the vision as much as we do, please consider going to patreon.com/womenintech. That's patreon.com/womenintech to make a small contribution to keep this podcast going. Thank you.
Welcome back to the Women in Tech podcast. I am still in Wilmington, North Carolina. So excited to be here meeting the extraordinary women involved in the budding tech scene. And I welcome Lori to the show. Hi, Lori.
Thank you.
So Lori, give us a formal introduction. Who are you and what is your involvement in the tech space?
I am currently the chair of the computer science department at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, although I am in my final days of being the department chair, and I will just go back to being a professor in computer science and information technology.
And how long have you been a professor slash everything else?
I started at UNCW in 1998, so it's been almost 20 years that I've been there.
And when did your love for computer science begin?
Many, many, many years before that, I was working at the University of Minnesota, actually as a staff person managing an office. And my supervisor told me that they were going to get a computer and did I want it in my office? And my answer was no. I was not going to have one of those things in my office. It was one of the first Macs, the little tower with the little tiny disk.
Right.
So we stuck it in a separate office and my staff managed to get a disk stuck. They asked me, because I was really good with figuring out how machines worked, if I could come and get the disk out.
Right.
I said no. They could call somebody. They went to lunch. I snuck back in and figured out the tech side of this machine. And as I popped it out, my supervisor walked back in knowing that I would have snuck in and started sending me off for classes. Probably about 4 weeks or so later, the computer was moved permanently into my office.
No.
And I started doing small programming at that time. And here I am.
It changed your life.
Yes.
And what have you noticed? I'm curious, before we dive deep into the conversation, what have you noticed about the world of computer science from when you first started to today?
I think what I've noticed most is that there are more women getting into it. In one of my jobs, I was truly the only female. And then here at UNCW, I was one of two, the only tenure track one. And then during my time as the chair, I have hired three women to come in. So in the 4 year time, I've hired three women. So it's changed a little bit. We've also updated to that we're not just computer science, but we have a program in information technology, and that has brought in a lot more women. And a lot more women who are older than the average age. So they're coming back wisely to get this tech.
Now, what is the difference between computer science and information technology?
The computer science side is more that they're doing the problem solving with software, doing some looking at how to implement and do things faster. And what we're doing with the IT side is more the hands-on, so that they're doing more of the problem solving with the hardware instead of the software. And technically, I am an IT person in a computer science department.
And what makes you so passionate about technology? What made you go from not wanting a computer in your office whatsoever to it being your entire world?
I love problem solving. My undergraduate degree was in biology, so I've always been science focused and trying to do that kind of problem solving. But even when I was in, I think, second grade, when they were starting to do time, my father had an old analog, well, it wouldn't have been unusual to have an analog at that time, clock, and that's what he was teaching me off of, and it didn't work. So he told me to take it apart, put it back together, and after I had tried it multiple times, he informed me it was never going to work. But it's been that problem solving to see what I can do to move things along, fix things, solve a problem, get a little creative in solving my problem, and it's been, it's fun. It never gets old. Always changes.
And who have you seen throughout the, like, can you give me an example of one extraordinary woman that was a student or someone at the school that you watched them evolve, and what profession did they pursue? And, you know, do you have some story? Yeah.
There are a lot of women that come to mind in doing that. I have one in particular who wanted to be computer science, and there was something about the computer science that just intrigued her, but it didn't quite match with her. And mm-hmm. then we spent a lot of time talking, and she moved over to a different branch of the technology, more on the information systems and management of it. And then she came back to computer science, and then she went back over to the management information side, and she took the skills from both programs. She graduated with the MIS degree and not the computer science one. But she went off, and she's working for a big company, and she is, I think, one of their stars, doing fantastic recruiting, managing what she's doing. She's just amazing. And she went from somebody who was kind of interested, wasn't quite sure she could do it, to someone who succeeds.
What do you think the learning style is, the difference between girls and everyone else?
When I've taught the initial programming class, and that's where we try to hook them, and I'm sorry to say that I'm not one of the most creative in thinking of wonderful problems to solve, but my new faculty are, and they've taken that same class, and they've come up with more ways of connecting and showing that there's a purpose. And I think if I can figure out that there's a purpose for what I'm doing, then I'm more interested. And that seems to be the catch for a lot of the female students, that if it's something that they can see what the end result is, even if it's learning how to program to make a game mm-hmm. or learning how to program to solve a bigger problem, then they understand why we're making them do that instead of, here, let's change Fahrenheit to centigrade and back.
Right, right.
But those more mundane things, they work, but they're not as exciting and not as much of a draw to pull them in.
You said that you started learning programming before you even had that computer in your office. Did
yes.
I hear you right?
Yes.
So what? How did that come about?
I'd sneak down the hall.
But what attracted you? I mean, was it the problem solving then?
It was the problem solving in the hopes that I could make parts of my life easier. Because I was managing an office, I needed to write reports, including how the budget was doing and doing some forecasting. And it was very time consuming. And I thought if I could just enter everything into the computer and just do a little bits of programming, even if it was just working with macros at the beginning, and that's where I started with getting the logic down, it was going to be a whole lot easier than when somebody walked in and said, tell me how we're spending this month. I could just almost push a button and have it come out. It took a while. It took a couple of months to get what I wanted done. But after that, everything that came out was a report off of a program that I had running in the background.
And then you were just hooked from that
point
on. And
then I was hooked.
And in being a professor, I'm not really aware of what that landscape is like. How did it feel to be a leader at your university for, computer science and technology, and to be a female and representing, what's possible?
Scary. Very scary. Because I was the IT person in a computer science department, and I was told that I was the IT person in a computer science department. But everything I did, I went out and it was, here I am, here's computer science, here's a woman at the head of it. This means all of you females who even remotely think, here I am as it. While I may not be the world's greatest programmer, I can program. And while I might be not the world's greatest app developer, I can make them. But it was just the opportunity to show people that it was not the stereotype person in the white shirt and the black tie and the black pants working. It was somebody who every once in a while put on a skirt.
Yeah. I think a really powerful thing for any gender and any classification is when we see someone, they go back to like the Barbie dolls. When we see someone that we feel like they look like us and they match us, and then we feel like then that's what's possible too. I know that's been a whole scandal in the Barbie doll industry.
Yes.
Yeah. But I think it's similar to all the other areas of life too. When we see somebody that we're like, oh, I could picture myself being like her, And, so it's really, really powerful. How would you say that you overcome challenges?
Well, going back to what you just said, that's one of the reasons I think my brand new faculty are doing so great to what they are because they are closer in age. And if you could see me, I'm not. My biggest challenge is that I feel like I am the poster child for the imposter syndrome because it's I'm the IT side, not the CS side. I came to this at the graduate level rather than an undergraduate program. So I don't have some of the strengths that my colleagues do. So that's been my biggest challenge on this and getting past it. But it's also meant that when I've been talking to my female students, I have to get them past the imposter, and they're looking at job descriptions and saying, I don't have 100% of those skills.
Right.
And going in would be fake and artificial. Mm-hmm. Nobody coming out of this program has 100% of those skills. Go sell what you can do and tell them that you can figure out the rest.
Yeah.
So that's been the biggest challenge for me and I think for my students.
We were talking about this yesterday, the whole like can versus will. One of my favorite mentors, Deborah, back in Los Angeles, she shares with me can versus will. And like a lot of women lean to, you know, can, and guys lean to will, which means like if a female feels that they can't do something, then they won't do it.
Yes.
Where a guy just will.
Yes.
Yeah. And so it's quite powerful to understand the difference.
That also shows up frequently in GPAs of students, that students who are sitting at maybe the C level, most of the guys, and there's some history on this, that they'll stay because they can do it and they will do it.
Yeah.
And a lot of the female students will say, if I'm not doing this at a fantastic level, then it's not meant to be.
And GPA is an advanced.
That's the grade point average.
A grade point average.
Sorry.
And you've brought up a few times, and I just want to make sure it's covered for everyone because everybody's at different levels listening. You've said I'm an IT person in computer science.
Yes.
So what some people may feel like, isn't that one and the same? So how is that different exactly?
That comes down to I'm the hands-on person. If I were working in industry, I would be the person that you would call, and I would troubleshoot the machine itself and put the network together and put the security on and do more of that aspect of it. Mm-hmm. If I am on the computer science side, I am writing more of the programs and the codes and the algorithms to solve the problems.
Got it. So it's more like author versus a book publisher or something, or like the guy that makes the book versus the person writing the book.
In some ways,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect. And so, where do you see, I mean, you're transforming again back into being a professor. Like what excites you about that and what freaks you out about that?
It's interacting with the students in a different way. When I was as chair, I didn't teach as many courses as I will be teaching. Mm-hmm. So my time was spent more working with the students and getting them through the program, getting them graduated, doing that. And now this is going to be going back and introducing the skills to them. It's kind of exciting working in the tech side of things because we stay on top of the tech. So I'm always getting some new toy to play with and get to share that new toy with the students. So that's kind of exciting about it. But there's still that thought of, man, I'm going to have to do some grading with these people now, too. And so that's probably the least looking forward to. But I'm looking forward to getting back and sharing and playing with the tech side of stuff with the students.
What are three tips everybody listening right now could walk away with on how to be an effective instructor?
Early feedback.
Yeah.
And that's really hard to do, especially when you're teaching programming, to run through everybody's program and give them feedback. But if I don't give the feedback, they have no idea what the issues are with their program. So that's a good one. And making it real. That again, not giving them that let's change centigrade to Fahrenheit when that's not what people do with technology, but do something with it that they can see the purpose and trying to get that connection across and staying current. As I said, it's the best thing about being on the tech side is that I get to stay current. But it's because I teach a lot of the entry courses for the students, there's some fear on something new and getting them interested, excited, and staying on top of it's
totally
kind of cool.
That it's difficult, like, well, if I study this, won't it change like a month out of school? And programming is the same, you know, we're constantly getting new codes, new languages.
Yep.
It's how do Why is it worth it to study? And then how do you stay up to date post-graduating?
As far as the programming goes, because it does change, we spend a lot of time initially in one particular language, Python, and get the logic through. Mm-hmm. So they get the logic, and then we switch them to another language.
Right.
And they've come in with the logic, they just have to learn the syntax.
Right.
And then they'll hit some other classes that do the exact same thing, give them, even if it's a brief exposure to another language, but they see that they've learned the logic side, and they just have to tweak it a little bit with changing the syntax.
Right.
And then they can go off and pretty much pick up another language for the company because they've got the basics down and ingrained.
Totally.
So that's one of the best things about going ahead and doing that program is just it keeps you going. But because you've been learning all along that you're going to have to keep updating those skills and learning the new syntax to go from one class to another, you're going to be able to do that in the job and to keep learning. And when the company says, here we've got this new program coming, here's that can and will, take that step, do it. You've already got the basics down. You may not know the language, but you know the logic and just jump with it.
So Python, from what I understand, is a great entry-level language in general.
Yes.
And new languages are coming out all the time. Why use one language versus another? Like, what is the differences in all these programming languages? Or what are the differences in all these programming languages?
I think the best example I can give you is that we originally were teaching students how to work in Java. And Java is huge. It has tons of libraries that need to be brought in to be as effective as Java is. But that's not something to learn at its most basic. At its most basic, we want you to learn the logic and how to put things together.
Mm-hmm.
Java is very particular on punctuation and syntax and bringing in these libraries. And so it's very difficult. Students have to learn a lot. Python's amazingly forgiving.
Mm-hmm.
So that the students don't have to worry so much about importing a whole bunch of things to use, they can step right in and start using it.
Right.
And again, it's forgiving. So if you don't quite do it, it seems to have a bit of an understanding. It's not quite so much connected to punctuation. It's more set up so that you do indenting instead of punctuation, and it works. And then once the logic is down, then they can go on to something that's bigger. And that's the reason why we started with something that was fairly easy to use. It's also not something that other people don't use in businesses. So they can take their Python skills and go out and do something.
I love it. I love the possibilities that are created every day and just you being an example to people of what's possible and just the world of coding in general. When I first started, the startup culture didn't exist. I think it existed. It just existed like a few years prior and then it died out. And then so I was part of the rebirth. So when I started my second company in about 2003, 2004, it's around Friendster and MySpace. Like there was no startup culture then, at least not in Los Angeles. And so to see everything happening now and so many people wanting to get involved in computer science and information technology and all the different areas of tech and just being curious about it and tell me more. It's really exciting to see that you're part of that movement and being here in Wilmington and, you know, how Tech Mountain, where we're sitting today, is like this thriving, you know, advocate for technology and startups and collaboration. It's really cool. I appreciate you making the time to kind of make us aware of what's going on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So how can people connect with you further?
They can reach me by email, PattersonL@UNCW. We'll get you connected to me. That's probably the easiest way. I tend to avoid phone calls. So that's the easiest way, and I'm pretty accessible.
Cool.
I still have students that I had 20 years ago who will reach out for advice and help.
Oh, that's awesome.
So they know where to track me down.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for hanging out with the Women in Tech podcast.
Absolutely.
If you want to get to know more awesome women in technology, go to womenintechvip.com. That takes you directly to the Facebook group so you don't have to search through all the different Facebook groups and figure out which one is the right Facebook group. Just go to womenintechvip.com. It will forward you straight there. And I will talk to you guys, hear you guys, tweet you guys, all the things in the next episode. Remember, you can say hello at Women in Tech Show on Twitter. Bye.
Women in Tech is an independently funded project funded by you, the community. So the way that you could support us is by going to patreon.com/womenintech and making a small contribution. Every little bit counts. That's Patreon, patreon.com/womenintech. Thank you so much for believing in our vision.